Hey friends, really hope that you had a great weekend and that you're getting ready for the week to come. I know that I had a great weekend spending time with really cherished friends from San Antonio, Alan and Katie. We had a great time hitting up some great restaurants and a wonderful bookstore. Shout out to Kaboom Bookstore in the Heights. Found some great finds. I'm really excited. Found a Norman O. Brown, The Love's Body. Peter, I can't ever say his name, Sloterdijk, You Must Change Your Life. And then a book on the theology of Jean-Paul Sartre in the Philosophy and Theology series by, I think, Kate Kirkpatrick. And I'm really interested in exploring how she unpacks Sartre's understanding of sin. Here you have this atheist who's being interpreted as a type of theological thinker, and I'm just really fascinated by that bringing together of the different worlds. So yeah, we also went to Yellow Rose Distillery, which makes some incredible bourbon and whiskey and rye. We had a great time. And today, this morning, Alan and I almost said we sat down and recorded, but we actually were standing up and we recorded a great episode that gets into a lot of different things. He helps us understand what clinical psychologist Marshall Rosenberg created, known as nonviolent communication. It's a method of communication that really seeks to understand what's going on within ourselves and within the other person to produce a type of connection with another human that is not about blaming or criticizing, but is truly about understanding and connection. And so we get into the various facets of this nonviolent communication model. We also get into John Gottman and his work and research around the four horsemen of the apocalypse, how that can be such a disastrous force in the context of a relationship and a marriage. And we also get into Brené Brown and some of her writing on the negative impact of blaming in a relationship. Really, Alan is trying to share his heart around what he sees as a tremendous problem, not only in interpersonal relationships, but in the larger societal background where we no longer are really communicating with each other or engaging in dialogue. We're not having a conversation. We're just attacking each other. We're blaming each other. We're engaged in a deep-seated contempt, and we're not really seeking connection. And so this was a great conversation trying to address that and to provide practical ways that you can engage in healthier connection and communication with those around you. As always, I want to encourage you to share this episode with anyone who might benefit from it. Please, if you have the time, go to Apple Podcast or Spotify and leave me a positive rating and review. And as always, continue the conversation. So, Alan, it is so great to have you, you know, in the home podcast studio. I know you've been on Psyche Podcast many times before, but I think this is the first time you've been to the house to actually record here. And I'm really excited just to see you and to have this conversation in person.
Yeah, I mean, it's really fun. And I kind of like this idea of before we've been sitting around my place or heck, first time I think it was around a fire out at a, you know, out at a Airbnb.
But yes.
This time we're actually standing. It's kind of a different thing.
It is. It feels a little weird, but I've kind of been experimenting with this desk and standing, recording, and I kind of like it.
Yeah, I do too. I think
it's the blood flowing.
New energy, new movement.
Absolutely. So, okay, when we were texting about what we would have this conversation around, you know, you sent me several resources because it sounds like there's something that's been on your mind lately that you've been communicating with your clients, that's just something that's really important to you that you see as a type of issue, you know, in our world today. And so I was wondering if you could maybe set up for us what's been on your heart in terms of, this issue that you want to explore with me today on this episode.
Yeah. First of all, I just really appreciate this opportunity again to,
of course,
you know, as you say, continue the conversation.
Absolutely.
You know? And really, that's what's been on my heart so much, both personally in my own marriage and relationship with my son. And he's even getting a girlfriend now in college, learning how to do that.
Sure.
And just, you know, seeing people just in my life all over the place, but then definitely as a marriage and family therapist and dealing with relationships, I've just seen kind of a breakdown that's coming on, and it seems like it's almost fast forwarding in some ways, almost going light speed. And that breakdown seems to be in this ability to converse with one another in a non-attacking way. The best way I say it is learning how to talk with one another, not at one another.
Okay.
I'm just seeing more and more that what we're doing is we're talking at each other. And I'm seeing all kinds of breakdown. And then I'm seeing people turn to other types of technology and all kinds of things, because those things will then just feed us in a way where it's like we're receiving, but we're losing that ability, I think, to kind of talk with one another in a non-confrontational way and to really seek understanding. And that's something that's just been fueling me to learn about myself, because definitely there's still places where I, you know, I think still talk at people, you know, I'm not really listening enough.
And no, I'm convicted about that too. Now, where do you go if someone asks you, so how did we get to this point? Or to ask it a little bit differently, what are some of the contributing factors that makes that almost talking at people and not with them such an issue today? Do you have some places you go to?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I reflect back on this is, I think there's always been places where we want to diatribe and just tell our part of it. And I think that's always been around. But when I really look at it in my life and kind of trying to get a wider sociological picture, if I can, and try to see, is I really think that it's been developing, and I know everyone blames it, but it with technology. I think in a lot of ways, as technology has come on, and especially with the advancements of social media and even texting, I think it's become so, so easy to just share our side, to share our part of how something goes, and not really look for how someone else is responding to that or even interested. And it's getting shorter and shorter, I think, about how do we listen to that before we start responding in some way and reacting. And so I really think it's technology driven. And because I'm seeing more and more where we're not interacting, what you and I are doing right now, where we're talking face to face. Yes, we're using some technology, but we're in a room, we're talking face to face, and we're trying to understand one another.
Absolutely.
That doesn't happen on technology that much. And the younger the generation, the less and less it seems to happen. But I'm seeing it, I'm 55 years old as of last month, and I'm seeing it even in my generation with couples and families where they're not talking either. It's all through technology. And I think technology, it's got a lot of fascinating things. You know, what we're doing right now and sharing with people is made technology driven, right?
That's
what's happening. But every strength has a weakness. And I think the weakness is we need to learn how do we still talk with one another through technology. And I don't think we've figured that out yet.
Yeah, I think you're right. So how does this land on you? I think I'm building on what you're saying in terms of the technology. One of the things I've been thinking about is just when you think about our screens and how much time we spend on them and just what we do on social media, I feel like it's making many of us a lot more narcissistic. And I'm not even going to like narcissistic personality disorder, but just this idea that it's about our individual experience and meeting our needs and sort of just more and more consumption. And to me, that just moves us away from this relatedness to an other, to someone that also has needs and desires. And so I think part of the communication breakdown is we're just kind of becoming these ultra individualistic, narcissistic units that just exist to consume and take in, rather than actually relate and participate in engagement with others.
I think that's beautifully said and exactly. I mean, technology is there to feed us.
Yes.
it feeds us, but it feeds us whatever we want to be fed.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
A human being can feed us and has for all of eternity.
Right, right.
But it's fed through growth and through this connection of I will learn about you, you will learn about me, and we will create this nuance in between, this interconnectedness in between that's a combination of us.
Yes.
A technology and computer just molds to whatever we want.
Yeah.
The internet will literally go out and based on my history will tell me what the next search will be. And right. It will feed whatever it is. It won't question what I am trying to do.
There's no challenging.
It just says, whatever you did is what we do. Facebook, right? I mean, all that stuff. It'll literally give me ads based on what I'm doing, right? It's feeding me what I want.
Right.
I think the growth and the journey in humanness that we've had all along is that another person may feed me what I want, but many times they may question what I want. They may challenge me. They may do that. Technology doesn't do that.
No.
It doesn't challenge anything. It just says, you want this? I'm going to give you more.
Right.
And as human beings, I'll go to my neuroscience part of me. Our one part of our neuroscience in our brain loves that. There's a thing called dopamine that loves that hit, that reward chemical.
Yeah.
It's where all addictions are built. And I think we've developed this dopamine addiction towards give me, receive, take in from the computers and technology. And we're losing that ability to get that dopamine hit from growth and conversation and connection.
Yes.
It's a longer term to get there. It can be a more long-term hit, but I don't think our brains and our bodies are getting accustomed to that anymore. It wants the short-term, not the growth long-term.
Man, that's so good. I align with that so, so much. Yeah, it's almost like I think about, you know, in some ways, other people are a type of obstacle in our life, but not in a negative way, right? They serve as a limit to that narcissistic tendency that we have where we're forced to kind of relate to something outside of ourselves, and it does cause us to kind of grow and it challenges us in healthy ways. But I think we're missing that.
Absolutely. I think what it's doing is, you can use that word narcissism, but kind of the image that just went through my head is we're almost, what technology does is it pulls us back to almost our two-year-old self, where we want what we want when we want it.
Yes.
And we all have that innate desire, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. It is where growth and push, I want something, so I'm going to go do something maybe to get that.
Sure.
Now, what I do get concerned is technology tends to feed that without us having to do something anymore much, right? I mean, I could just barely, heck, now I don't even have to type something. I can talk to the phone, the technology, and it automatically appears. In fact, right before this, we were watching something that's showing a new technology that's out there that will put your computer screen out there and will do stuff. And I could just look at something and it magically appears. It's amazing where it's going, but we're losing the growth. I think we're losing the connection and the reward that comes from growth. And so it's taken us back to, I want what I want when I want it. And if it doesn't magically appear, then we lose that ability to sustain connection to get through it. And I think human beings need long-term connection.
Yeah.
That's where the growth is. It's not in the short term, but in that long term. And how to, you know, have a disagreement and yet rebuild.
Sure.
Right. To stay connected and understanding without attacking, but to seek that pure understanding and not to blame, but to understand. And I think computers, again, don't do that. And I'm not anti-computers. Again, we couldn't do what we're doing right now without it.
Right.
But they're a tool. They're not a relationship.
Yes. Yes.
And I think we're trying to move so much. I'm seeing so many people that think the main relationship in their life is the technology. It's like you said, how much percentage of your time a week, a day is in relationship to a computer?
Right.
And how much is in relationship to yourself, nature, or another human being?
Yes.
It's something we got to challenge ourselves with, because that's what's really building in me is, if we don't change that, it's a slippery slope that goes really quick.
Yeah, I'm nervous about where it's going. Yeah, yeah, toward
right.
disconnection. Yes. And you know, and you've talked about like the dopamine hits, and we live kind of in a society or a culture of like instant gratification. And I get biologically why all that's intriguing to us and why we do that. But I think what's often missed is, if you don't have that long-term picture in mind, all the stuff you've been talking about in terms of connection with other people, I don't think you end up with a meaningful and fulfilling life.
I think exactly that. You know, short-term rewards create short-term meaning.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
That's very good.
It's short-term.
Yes.
As soon as I get, I mean, I may want the $1 million. Now, I haven't had it yet. Maybe one day I will, but I've known people.
I'm not holding my breath.
I'm a counselor. Maybe this podcast goes wild. Who knows? Let's see. But, you know, but what I've seen people that have gotten the $1 million jobs. I've worked with those people. I've seen it. I actually have some friends that have done that. And what I've seen is, okay, you get to that point and then there's still the now what?
Yeah. What's next?
What's next? And there's that part. And if it was just to get the $1 million and now I have that and I have the car and I have the house, there's still a despair that can come up, a hopelessness. Growth is a never-ending process. It is about transformation over time.
Yes.
But we're not transforming over time anymore. We're transforming moment to moment, second to second, millisecond to millisecond almost. And then we get frustrated when anything takes any amount of time.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's been lost. Generations ago, we knew stuff was going to take a while.
Sure.
Even to get fed. I can't just go to the local grocery store and get fed. Heck, nowadays, last night, we ordered it and delivered to our doorstep.
Right, right.
100 years ago, they didn't happen. You wanted something? You better go find the deer. You better go find the bear, something, right?
Right.
It might take a day, a month, and you better have leftovers somewhere to figure it out, or you're going to go vegan,
That's such a good point.
Right? But this is what's happening. I think we're losing connection. And that's really my part of everywhere is how do we stay connected? Understanding we're going to have differences.
Yes.
Differences are normal. In fact, they're needed. If we were all the same, there's no growth. Differences are good. But I think we're losing that ability to communicate differences and to say, well, if you didn't meet my need automatically, well, the heck with you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just cut you out and I'm going to move on.
Mm.
And we got to learn how to communicate in these nonviolent ways, in these ways that don't attack, but seek understanding. And that's been my biggest passion in life because I'm just not seeing it more and more where people have the ability to tolerate it,
okay,
to tolerate that growth.
Yeah. So, okay, Alan, you've done such a good job and you're so clear and maybe outlining what our current problem is in terms of disconnection and this struggle with communication in a healthy way. Where would be the first place you'd want to go if you're trying to help someone understand what the right path could be, what a nonviolent type of communication could actually look like?
Yeah, and that's really, and I use that word, and I appreciate you picking up on it, because I really think that's where it begins, is there is a process that was taught way back in the 1960s.
Okay.
And, you know, nowadays, maybe people can't remember back to the 60s. You know, I understand. I'm slightly there. I was born in 68, so I came up right after it. But what was happening in the United States at that time was it was a very much in some ways where we are again today, it seems like, in our conversation, both at a political, a societal level, as well as a family, just individual level, where it was very conflictual at the time. Back in the 60s, we were dealing with, you know, even with music, right? You had the Woodstock, you had the hippies,
sure,
right? And people didn't understand that coming out of the 50s, right? It's this freedom and all that. And then you had you had Martin Luther King, and you had all the civil rights stuff going
right.
on. We had people coming back from Vietnam, and people didn't understand, should we fight? Should we not fight? All those things. Well, basically, the culture had been broken down. And so what happened was there was a psychologist named Marshall Rosenberg, Dr. Rosenberg, that came up, and he kind of made it to a top level. And he started engaging much what, and I'm not saying I'm Dr. Rosenberg by far, but it is something I'm engaging people
sure.
to do, which is how do we learn to communicate in a nonviolent way? He looked around, and he said, our conversations, our interactions are really violent in a lot of ways. Mm. We're attacking one another. He says, so how do we seek understanding? How do we seek connection? You know, one of his quotes that he said, and I love to hear it, is that he says, in every moment, each of us is trying to meet our own needs in the best way we know how.
Mm.
And I think that's so important, is that so many times we're like, well, you're just trying to attack me with this.
Sure.
But no, people, even if they're coming at it and might feel that way, they're still trying to meet a need. There's still a feeling there. There's a need they're trying to do. They may not be doing it in the most effective way, but they're trying to do that because that's what we do, is we try to meet our own needs. So he created a process that I think has been lost over time, but I think we need to re-engage it potentially as a formula maybe to at least converse about. Maybe it's not the be-all end-all, but I think it's a heck of a foundation to start the conversation from.
Okay, yeah. And one of the things that's coming up for me as you're saying that, and as I'm looking at this text as well, that I recognize or I realize that he was actually inspired by Carl Rogers.
Yep.
And he's, you know, a huge figure in the world of psychotherapy, but I just love him so much because to me, he symbolizes the centrality of just empathic connection and listening to each other.
That is exactly it. If you know anything about, you know, we're both mental health and counselors. But yeah, Carl Rogers was that part that said, you know, even as us as professionals, what was happening in our field prior to Carl Rogers a lot was you would come into a mental health office or a psychologist's office and they would do much like the medical doctors still do. They'd listen short term, but then they would start talking at you. They'd start talking to you and saying, okay, here's what you need to do. Here's your screw ups. Here's your good things and do this, do this. It was very prescription based. And Carl Rogers, at least in my understanding, you can share if you have a difference, but was the first one to say, before we do any of that, we got to get really good at listening.
Yes.
But not just hearing.
Right.
He described the difference between hearing and listening. Hearing is that thing that just, I can hear the words. It's what a parrot does.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, I can repeat back what you said. Listening is a full body. It is empathy, which means empathy means I'm trying to actually feel what you feel.
Yes.
Think what you think. I'm never going to do it perfectly, but I'm going to get to a full understand as much as possible before I ever respond. And what he often found was I did that. I didn't have to respond hardly at all. People figured it out much in of their own. But yeah, so it did come out of Carl Rogers saying we need to seek understanding and listening before we ever share any words. And because at the time in that era, people were just talking. Mm. They were talking and talking and talking. And basically Rosenberg and Carl Rogers before him basically said, stop the talking, start listening.
Start listening, yeah.
And I think, and that's where this whole thing came out of was, can we truly listen? Can we get comfortable listening? Because we start talking when we get uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
It's a distraction.
Absolutely.
Right? I'll distract when I'm uncomfortable. I'm just going to start filling in the blanks. And he's saying, no, just listen. Let's do this. And that's what Marshall Rosenberg also did. So, you know, part of what comes up, if I can share kind of just the basic steps.
Yeah,
so there's basically four steps that Marshall Rosenberg or Dr. Rosenberg came up with. And I love the simplicity. And what I found in my life, again, is that truth or effectiveness comes from simplicity.
I like that.
You know, I've often challenged myself in that. I'm sure you've gone to way too many conferences where you wonder, does the person on stage actually know what they're talking about?
Yes.
Because they're talking about it at such a high level.
Yes,
or
yes.
You read a book and you're okay, I love the 15-letter words, but do they actually know what that thing means?
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
I mean, it's like, can you break it down for me? Can you have some simplicity?
Totally.
I love the higher level thinking, but I also think that truth and relatability comes from, can we take that and then break it down to tangible parts, right?
I couldn't agree more.
I mean, and if I'm going to eat healthy, it's great to know about macronutrients and carbohydrates and all that, but it's simple. Can I eat a piece of protein and can I eat a vegetable? You know, it's like, okay, can I define what those are, right? Yes, we could talk about all the other stuff. And I think that's what Marshall Rosenberg did so good, excuse me, for conversation and interaction. So he said, here's the first thing we got to do. The very first step is we got to, as much as possible, get into an observation mode.
Okay.
Start looking at the interaction, start looking at the conversation, start literally looking at the person, the environment, and do it, the hardest thing, do it without judgment.
Oh, man.
Do it without blame, to actually see it like a video would be recording it.
Okay.
Okay, think technology, we got technology, the bad part. The good part in technology is it can record and it just records whatever is there.
Yeah.
It doesn't care. If someone walks behind the background, it doesn't judge if that person's good or bad. It just records the person in the background.
It just records it, yeah.
Or a picture, right? So what he's encouraging us, very first part, is get into a non-judgment, non-blaming, free of labels, as counselors, you know, yeah, no labels, but even as parents, this is my, you know, struggling child. This is my great child. This is where, get out of the judgment, get out of that. What is actually being observed?
Okay.
At this moment.
Do you think in this first stage of the nonviolent communication process, observation is connected to, and we were just watching a video about this from Brené Brown, this idea of curiosity?
I think absolutely. Okay. You come from a point of, yes, I actually am interested in the observation and I have to be curious about it. That's where the healthy part is. Or I observe it and I immediately jump to a story or a past or this is what this means. And I'm not observing anymore. I'm just now, I've decided. And there's a very difference between making a decision off an observation or being curious about it. And I think, yes, what he's talking about here is stay curious about this until you think you fully understand. And then what you do, the first step is that you then replay that or converse that back to the person.
Okay.
So you say something like, when I see, when I hear, when I notice, right? We go through our senses and we say that important word. The first word of conversation, if we're going to talk with one another, is I, not you.
Okay.
If you start with when you do this, when you do that, it's an attack automatically.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe you could speak to this at a neurological level, or, you know, what happens when we do the starting with the you?
Yeah, it literally, we've looked at it, I haven't, but research has looked at it from a neuroscience. If you start with you, immediately it floods the nervous system with cortisol, with adrenaline. It triggers this part of the brain that's called the amygdala to go into an attack mode.
Sure.
And what happens when you're in attack, then you're going to fight, freeze, or you're going to flee, right? Those are the typical things that we do, and we do it in a conversation sometimes, right? I may not hit you with my fist, but I will hit you with my words.
Oh, that's so good.
Or I may not run from you, but I will shut down and go to my technology. I'll flee to technology, right?
Sure.
Those become the things. So when you start with you, it's almost neurobiologically to go back into the attack mode.
Okay.
And so
someone's going to be defended and they're going to want to maybe attack, protect themselves.
That's it.
Yeah.
We're going to either protect ourselves or we're going to try to defend against the other person, right?
Okay.
And so those become the things. So now, you know, what also gets talked about in here is that there's four ears that we can listen for in any conversation.
Yeah.
Okay. And it goes back. So the first two, when you start with you, this is what's usually going to happen. We're going to start with a blame. We're either going to blame the other person, which is the attack, right? Now you're at fault, so we're attacking, or we're going to blame ourselves, which is a place of like submitting. It's like, I don't even want to fight. I'll just submit, the heck with it. And I'll move on. The problem is when we blame another person or blame ourselves, conversation breaks down.
Yeah.
Now it's all just about blame. It's, you know, people talk about a blame game.
Oh, yeah.
We're not talking to understand anymore. What he says is the other way we go about it, and that's what this whole process is we can get curious about understanding our own feelings and needs at a moment.
Gotcha.
Or understanding the other person's feelings and needs. That's where the connection comes from. But it's very, very difficult sometimes because our knee-jerk reaction is to blame and to attack.
Yeah.
We need to question and say, if I'm hooked here, what hooked me? What do I do? And how can I more fully understand my feelings and needs or the other person's feelings and needs? And so that observation is all about that piece. There's so much going on in the observation that we tend to move through so quick. Many times we just disregard this. Heck, I even in parts of my marriage therapy training, I remember learning they wouldn't talk enough about the observation.
Mm.
They would immediately want to jump to, well, what are you feeling? What are you needing?
Yeah.
Right? And those are important. We're going to find those are parts of his process. But if we don't fully understand and explore the observation, we're missing so much of the context that leads to the feelings, the needs.
I think that's exactly right.
And so that's what we're losing. I think we've lost context. And again, technology doesn't provide context a whole lot.
Right.
Human beings provide context, right? But we got to get curious about the observations without judgment.
Sure.
You know, one of the best questions that I learned, and it could go through this whole process, but starting with the observation is, tell me more.
Oh, yeah.
Until I understand, just keep asking that question. Tell me more. Tell me more. Tell me more. And then I finally go, okay, so here's what I'm observing. Am I right? Mm. That's another wonderful question.
Sure.
But we don't want to ask that sometimes because we don't want to know.
Right.
Or we don't want to be challenged that maybe we don't understand.
Maybe we're wrong.
Maybe we're wrong.
We have something to learn.
Right. And we don't want to do that. But that's an important, important first step.
Sure.
Tell me more. Am I right? Tell me more. Am I right? Those become foundations for talking with one another versus like you say something. I'm like, well, let me tell you what I think.
Yeah.
Right. Or no, you're wrong on this.
Right. You're just responding at that point. You're not really engaging.
That's exactly it. And those become the parts. So again, it's the observation absolutely first that we need to do.
Okay. So let me ask you this, Alan, but before we jump into kind of the second step of this nonviolent communication process from Dr. Rosenberg, would it be helpful, since you've mentioned this kind of thing that happens so often of blaming, to maybe get into what you wanted to share in terms of Brené Brown's thoughts on blaming?
Yeah, I love, and that's where I go back to, you know, is this part of blame? Because I think we don't understand how just almost natural it is. It takes effort to not blame.
Yeah.
When we start responding and communicating. Again, it's innate to blame ourselves or blame others. And I do love what Brené Brown says is, I've read a lot of work on blame. And then when she finally said this, I was like, okay, something finally resonates with my spirit, my soul. I don't know what you call that, right? But sure. It's that innate thing that when you hear it, I think we've all had at times, it's like, oh yeah, this finally seems to personify, right? Or give something. And so here's what she said, is she said, blame is strictly this part. Is that blame is a discharge of pain or discomfort.
So good.
And when I heard that, I was like, okay, that's what's happening. I'm in pain. I'm uncomfortable. I don't want to recognize it. I don't want to deal with it. So I'm going to blame this person.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to blame myself. Oh, I'm just not smart enough. I'm not stupid enough. Or I'm whatever, whatever. Or heck, I'll blame nature. Oh, it's too hot. It's too cold. It's whatever. Or people have a spiritual belief. I'll blame God, right?
Sure,
whatever
sure.
It is. But I'm going to blame because I'm not comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Mm.
And the problem is that growth and connection comes from sharing discomfort at first. It's getting through that discomfort. If I go to the gym, I often tell my clients this, I've told my son this recently too. If you go to the gym and you don't come home slightly uncomfortable and like you worked out and you had a sweat, you played at the gym. You didn't work out at the gym.
That's a great point.
Right?
I agree.
There's nothing wrong with playing, right? We do that, but that's not where strength and growth comes from.
Sure.
It's the same thing in communication, but what breaks it down is we get into blame, and it's the way to stop that growth and connection. And then we wonder why we're not connected. It's because we didn't get through the discomfort. We didn't try to get to understanding it. So we need to work through that blame piece of that. Instead of trying to push away discomfort and pain, we need to do this thing of lean into it.
Okay.
In curiosity and understanding. So I love what she says about blame in there. And what she says literally is if we don't do that, relationships do break down at that point.
Mm.
As soon as you start blaming self or the other person and don't get into connection and curiosity, trust starts breaking down.
Yeah.
Right? I can't trust you if you're blaming yourself or me.
Yeah.
I trust you through the conversation of getting through that.
Sure, sure. So, okay, what do you do with this? Again, this was a resource that you also shared, not to get too far away from the nonviolent communication model, which we'll get back to. But in terms of John Gottman's idea of the four horsemen of the apocalypse in relationships, I think what you've been describing as blame probably connects to what he calls the criticism component. I wonder if you could speak to that.
Sure. And so what happens here is when we go into blame, is that the first thing we want to do is, again, criticize ourselves or criticize someone else. Most of the time, we're going to criticize someone else many times, right? We're going to get critical. And there's a difference between a criticism and a complaint.
Yes. I think that's a very important distinction.
And I think, you know, because criticism breaks down the conversation. What you're going to see in the whole language of nonviolent communication is that it gets into complaints that you can have. Complaint is, I am going to say, I have a feeling, I have a need, I have a request, and you're not meeting that, or you're not trying to understand that.
Got you.
And so it stays on the point of behavior, right? Behavior is something we can address, we can talk about. A criticism now becomes about the person.
Okay.
That's the key. It is now an attack, right? If I'm asking you to change a behavior, you know, may I
maybe
request...
Maybe we can give an example.
Yeah, you know, you say something that really triggers anger in me. Instead of going back, well, what you said really hurt me and this is all your fault and stuff, I would come up and say, you know, Kike, I'm not even sure if you're aware of it. However, that word you just used was very triggering to me.
Okay.
May I request that you phrase that in a different way?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
That's good.
It's now, instead of attacking and criticizing you for something, I'm making a request off of my personal needs, my personal feelings, and things there.
Sure.
And so that becomes the difference. So a complaint stays with behavior.
Okay.
A criticism gets into an attack.
Okay.
And as soon as we start attacking, the natural reaction is to do what? Attack back.
Yeah.
Or to go, it's not worth the attack, and I'm going to leave.
Yes.
Or I'm going to go to my technology and leave you by looking at technology, put in my headphones, my son's favorite one, put in his headphones and turn it off, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's those things. So criticism is an attack. Now, what I love about this is there's always alternatives. Gottman will talk about the antidotes.
The antidotes, yes. Yeah, yeah.
So you have criticism, and you go, okay, what's the thing that puts criticism out? Or that helps with it is to have a gentle startup.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it's exactly how I just said that, is that instead of going, well, you did this, I go, Kike, not sure if you're aware of this. However, may I share with you what I was feeling, what I'm needing here? It's much softer.
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear that? It's about me. You can agree with it or disagree with it, but it's a softer place.
Sure.
Literally softer with your voice, too. Sure. When we go on the attack, the natural thing is to go, well, you did this, right? And literally my voice, you could just hear that.
No, and even, I mean, I know we're sort of just kind of making up this example, but my nervous system is responding to both ways that you're doing it, right, in very different ways. And the one that's, I think, the right one, which you're coming in with a soft start, you're even coming in with a type of humility and not perfect knowledge around, I'm not even sure if you understand this is happening or if you're aware of this. So that kind of gets me thinking a little bit like, maybe I am doing this. But you're not starting with a certainty of, I know for sure that you're just trying to really hurt me. And, you know, you're kind of coming in, yeah, with a bit of humility as well, which I really appreciate.
Right. It is that humility saying, is there, first of all, any part that I might have done?
Yeah.
Maybe I led to this, right?
Yes.
There's some part, because we know the conversation is a two-way, right? We know
100%.
Relationship is a two-way. So they're saying, maybe there's some part of me. It's also going back to what I said in that first quote of Rosenberg, saying that everyone's trying to meet their needs in the best way possible.
Yes.
So if this person said it that way or did, it's because they were trying to get their point across. They were meeting their needs the best they could. Maybe they didn't have a better way. So it's coming in softer going, I know you probably didn't mean it this way, but here's how it came across,
yeah.
Right? Or maybe that need was so important to you that you wanted to get your point across to me, but I'm trying to understand again. I have that lens of understanding you.
Yes.
I'm not blaming you, right?
Yes.
And so that gentle startup is just going, hey, wait, let's just stay soft. Let's stay connected. I can still be frustrated with you. I can still be hurt by you, but let's try to understand where that frustration and hurt came from and
sure.
Getting curious. And so the startup is so important. Gottman will say, the way you start a conversation tells everything about how it's going to go and how it's going to end.
Yeah.
You can predict how long it will be by how you start. Literally, by if you start harsh, you start with you, you're going to have the other person on attack literally within the next sentence or two, and they're either going to fight or flee or freeze.
So good.
And so how we start is so important. Am I starting from a place of curiosity and seeking understanding, or am I starting on a place of, I'm just going to attack and beat you up?
Yeah.
And, you know, I talk to my guys a lot in couples therapy. I get some of a shock in them at times, but I'll look my guys in the eye. I'm like, so I want you to go ahead and just, there's your wife sitting over there, your girlfriend sitting over there. Go ahead and slap her in her face.
Right.
And they look at me like, Doc, what do you mean slap her in the face? They're like, I would never do that. I'm like, really? What you just said 2 minutes ago was a verbal slap in the face.
Mm.
If you won't slap them verbally or physically, why do you do it verbally?
That's so convicting.
Why? Because this is what happens. We were hurt. We get into blame. We have a discharge of pain and discomfort. I don't want to take ownership on it.
Right.
I don't want to get curious. So I'm going to blame it on the other person.
Yes.
And so we got to get soft with ourselves and with each other and start there. Start without criticism. Because what happens is, and this is where Gottman goes, is if you stay with criticism, the next thing is not to just attack them, but to now start attacking their whole person and being. It's not even just you did something wrong. It is you are something wrong.
Yeah.
Not you made a mistake, but you are a mistake. And he calls that contempt.
Okay.
And contempt, I love what he says. Contempt is the sulfuric acid Ooh. Of relationships. He would literally, and he was known for this and written about dumb research, that he says he would start talking to couples and he would look for, and he saw that if people went into contempt, that he could predict with over 90% accuracy that they would. So he predicted with 98% accuracy, over 90% accuracy, that if you got into contempt and you started personifying the person as the problem, as that part, that they would end up in separation or divorce within 7 years.
It's amazing.
It's like he could literally predict that. And he was like, this stuff is so toxic. He said, basically what he would say is it takes it from something that we can potentially talk about and change to now you're like, okay, well, I'm not going to change for you. It starts building resentment. It starts building bitterness. It breaks down trust. Because if I can't trust you to protect me, which is part of what any relationship is, to keep me safe, then I'm not going to keep you safe and I'm either going to leave or I'm going to attack back. And it starts this toxic thing. So contempt is so, so much. And we see it in our society. We see it at so many levels where it's not, there's a problem, but this person is the problem. And one of the things that I always say is a person is not a problem. The problem is the problem. The behavior, the issues, what they're saying, sure, we need to talk about that in a nonviolent way. But if we get to contempt and we personify a person, then it breaks down all connection and relationship and communication at any healthy level.
Sure.
And so what he says is now we got to get curious. And what he says the opposite is when I want to condemn you, instead of I find a way to have gratitude or appreciation for
you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Still find that place in them that they're human, that they're still seeking the best they can, the way they know how, the same way you're seeking the best to do what you can.
So that's building that culture of appreciation.
That's it. It's building this culture of appreciation going, I may not like what you say or even what you believe, right? I may not believe it, but I can still appreciate something about you. If I lose the ability to have gratitude and some appreciation for you as a human being, then everything breaks down.
Yeah.
And so that's what he says. Our antidote for contempt is to have a soft startup, right? That we start there, and then we build appreciation. Mm. What is it I can still find connection? And that's where I got to keep talking because sometimes I can't find it. You might be so different than me that it's hard for me to place it, but there's somewhere that there's likely a place we can agree on.
Yeah.
And if we can have at least that and build the appreciation for that.
You know what I've been thinking about, Lily? This is a tight, and I got this from a movie where there was a lot of interpersonal disagreement and division, but this one character said, can we at least focus on the overlap in our Venn diagram? I've kind of been thinking about that in terms of just marriages and just people in general. What are the things where there's that overlap in our Venn diagrams?
That's it. You know,
maybe start there.
Start anywhere that you can find gratitude, anywhere that you overlap. You know, start with the simplest thing.
I believe that even with someone that is completely opposite than you, let's say on a political level, there can be at least one thing that you can find some type of connection with.
If nothing else, you're both passionate.
I hadn't thought about that.
Passionate, right? You're both, okay, yes, I'm passionate about mine, you're passionate about yours. Okay, let's talk about what is it that underlies our passion?
Mm.
What is it that's there?
It probably hits at a shared value, maybe.
I bet you there's a shared value. And honestly, Gottman talks about that. Healthy relationships, ultimately, the most important thing they do is they find their shared value. Right?
Yeah.
One may like California traveling and the beach, and the other may like the mountains in Colorado. Right? But you find the shared value that you both like travel.
Yeah.
Right? That you both like outdoors, maybe. And you'd be like, so what's the shared value we can find? And then maybe you can find an overlap. Maybe Northern Colorado has the beach and the mountains, right? Or, sure. or not Colorado, California has those, right? And you find those places where maybe you can overlap, right? But it's looking for that shared value and it's looking for that gratitude and appreciation. Without gratitude, it's really hard to be connected.
I can't agree more with that.
I mean, we got to find that place that I still have something in you that I can appreciate.
Sure, sure.
And it's, if nothing else, you know, I've heard one author talk about is, can we just share that we all struggle?
Yes.
We all struggle to grow. We're all struggling to figure it out, yes. right? Can we have a shared part of that? Can we just unite on the shared struggle?
This is where, not to take us too far afield, but this is where I really like Kristen Neff and her work on self-compassion, the second kind of feature of that, which is our shared humanity.
That's it.
We all kind of suffer. We're all imperfect. We all struggle.
We all struggle. But within that, we can all struggle together, or we can struggle attacking each other. We can struggle individually, and we can do so much more together than we can do apart.
Absolutely.
And if we can find that place of unification, it doesn't mean similarity. It can just unified, right?
Yeah.
You come at it your way. I come at it my way. But can we find a unified place of growth, of connectedness, and let go the criticism, the contempt? Because ultimately, if you keep going on as four horsemen, what happens is that now if you've gone into contempt, my natural thing is, well, now if you see me as a problem, guess what? Well, let me tell you how you're a bigger problem.
Yeah.
And we start defending. And we defend at the level that we've been attacked.
Yes.
You criticize me, I'll criticize you. You give me contempt, I'm going to give you contempt. You shut down, I'm going to tend to shut down to you, right? So the defensiveness is innate, but what we got to see is we can have some control over this if we will change. So what, you know, Gottman will say is the difference between defensiveness is that part of saying before, it says take responsibility. Mm. It's that coming in with humbleness and saying, okay, wait, maybe I started off harshly.
That's so good.
Maybe I observed something and didn't ask some questions about it, right? Take some responsibility. Get humble for a moment and say, if there's a disagreement here, there's some part where I probably don't fully understand, or I'm not making myself clear enough for them to understand, or maybe I haven't given enough time for them to understand, right? I expect them just to snap their finger and understand it. And maybe it's so different than what they've been raised to believe in. I gotta give them time to grow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I went through school and different things, especially with math, there's a reason I'm a counselor. You know, math was not my strong point. It took me a lot longer to learn math than a lot of my friends that are engineers and stuff.
Me too.
I just didn't snap to those mathematical formulas the way they did.
Right.
You know, but if you give me enough time, I could learn it. You give me patience, you give me growth, you give me understanding. You don't criticize me, you don't condemn me for not getting it. You say, hey, just keep trying, keep trying. Let me see if we can figure out a new way. Then I can do that. And I don't blame myself. I take responsibility. Okay, yeah, maybe this is a little harder for me. Let me keep going. Let me keep going.
Sure.
And I go into that and I appreciate the journey and I'm soft, right? And I take responsibility. Those are how we get out of the criticism, the contempt, and the defensiveness.
Yes.
And if we can learn how to avoid those and embrace the antidotes, we get so much better. Because the last part that Gottman will talk about in the Four Horsemen is, okay, so you've done criticism, that elevated, and we didn't do a soft startup, right? We now went to contempt, and I stopped getting in gratitude for this person, appreciation. And now I've gone into defensiveness instead of trying to take responsibility. So what's the final thing we do? And we see this in society all the time, is we stonewall.
Stonewall.
Now it's like, okay, I'm not going to talk to you at all. Or you see it on technology, you know, favorite thing, you know, of a lot of people now, ghosting.
Yeah. Or blocking.
Blocking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ghosting. I'm going to block you. I'm going to ghost you. I'm going to put up a wall, right? Literally, that's what it is. Well, as soon as you got the wall up, there's no more conversation. If there's no conversation, there's no connection, no relationship, at least not in any healthy way.
Sure.
So what we got to do is when we want to put the wall up, we got to take a breather. There's a difference between putting a wall and saying, I need a breather.
Right. Or having a boundary.
Having a boundary or something like that, which says, I still want the conversation to go, but we need to have some barriers maybe.
Yes.
Or we need some time to chill out for a moment to do that. And so if we can do these things and kind of build the antidotes instead of the four horsemen, that we can have that chance to connect. So those are what we're trying to avoid when we're even in the observation, but we'll circle back to the nonviolent communication. But it's really for all of the steps that come into the nonviolent communication. We got to be careful through each of the steps. Are we on the four horsemen of criticism, contempt, defensiveness, or stonewalling? Or when we're doing these four steps, are we trying to do a gentle startup? Are we trying to build the culture of appreciation, understanding, and gratitude? Are we trying to take responsibility? And are we trying to keep calm throughout the whole thing, physically and emotionally?
Sure.
If we do those things, we're more likely to do it. So if I come back to the Marshall Rosenberg part, we talk about observation. And the next step, and then this is where it breaks down, is we need to start sharing our feelings.
Okay.
So I observed whatever it was. I heard, I saw, and that brought about a feeling in me. Okay. Now, what we got to get really good at is describing the feeling. Most of us don't know what our feelings are.
Right.
You know, especially, and as a male, I will say this.
Yeah.
Maybe you relate.
Oh, please. Yes.
Males do not get taught feelings.
No.
We get taught glad and mad.
That's right.
Most of the time, right? It's glad or mad. There's no sad. Big boys don't cry. None of that stuff.
Right.
Glad or mad, right? We got to have a wider part of what goes on and understanding what is the feeling. And it needs to start there with say, I feel this, not you made me feel. Again, you hear the word you.
Right. That's blaming.
It's blaming. And all of a sudden, now we're taking the responsibility off ourselves. It's all on you. And now here's where the breakdown is. Let's say that's even true. If now you made me, now the only way this thing happens is if you're willing to change.
Hmm.
I take away all responsibility of myself for this conversation because now it's all your fault.
Good.
Right? Now it's like, well, you didn't change. So, okay, this conversation breakdown has nothing to do with me. It has to do with you. That's taking ourselves off the hook. That's that I don't want to see anything in myself. So I'm going to discharge that pain to you and blame you. Right? And so we got to get there and say, what am I feeling? Literally get to the different feeling words, you know, and they're big words. Like, what does it really mean to be inspired? If we go to the positive side, what does it mean to be hopeful? Or if we want to go to the hurt and the pain, what does it mean to be scared or vulnerable or tense or disgusted? Those are the words we want to
use.
Sure. Because those then we can try to explore what's going on. So I was disgusted by the way you said, well, that's a very different way than I was. It kind of hurt my feelings, right? You know, there's difference in that, right? But we can start understanding the level, but we got to get very specific in what are we observing? What are we feeling? Okay, because the more specificity we can have, the better the understanding is.
Yes.
Most of the arguments come from we're not specific enough.
Mm.
We don't know it ourselves, so how? And then we expect the other person to know it.
That's a good point, yeah.
Right? We got to get specific in our language, in our communication. Here's what I observed. Here's what I felt. It goes in that kind of order generally because observation leads feeling. The feeling didn't come out of nowhere. It came out of somewhere. Something was observed, smelt, heard, taste, touch, something. Get clear on that. Then what's my feeling?
Yeah. And I think a quick shout out and just plug again to the great Brené Brown, which we've been talking about even this morning before hitting record. She has, I think it's probably her latest book, if I'm not mistaken, and there's an HBO Max show that digs deeper into it, but just her book, Atlas of the Heart, which really goes into all these various layers of emotions and the different kinds of emotions. That's a book that I would recommend a lot of the guys that I work with to kind of really understand the whole pantheon of different emotions we can have as a human. And so I think the more you understand it, the better language you have for it, the better you'll be able to relate to people and express those emotions.
If we don't understand emotions, we don't understand the motivation of people. Emotions are what motivate us. I often remind myself, and this is something I think I heard it somewhere. Maybe it's one of those things I piece together. I
love it.
Someday I need to go back and try to figure out where I found this. But I can say in my own life and when I share this with others, it seems relatable. So again, full disclosure, I'm not sure exactly where the science and reference comes from, but see if this relates to maybe the audience as well as you, KK.
Sure.
Is that emotions, I break it down to be an energy needing motion.
Okay.
Right? Like that. It's that energy in motion. What happens is we don't like the energy, as Brené Brown says, and then we blame it, right? It's that discharge of pain and discomfort, yes. So I blame it, right? It's energy in motion. We got to figure out, where did the energy come from? The feeling then is, where is it felt in my body, in my relationships, in my conversation? It's that feeling part, right? And so what I love about that is we got to get real specific. Where did the energy come from, and where is it being felt in us and there? Sure. And then talk about that. You know, it's feeling this. I am feeling, not you, not us. I am feeling this. And talk that out in there. And the more specific, I love Through the Atlas of the Heart. It's a great book. And I think it is. And she even said, I remember Brené talking about that book. She was very conflicted about to send it, to write it and stuff, because she knew it was one of those. It's not really a book. It's an atlas.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a definitional book. It's like an atlas of a map, right?
Yes.
It's not tell a story. And everything she'd written up to that point was she explained a thought, gave stories, gave history, gave meaning. This book is written very different, but she thought it was so vitally important to both what she had written and where she was going next and her other things, was we got to understand the heart. We got to, and the heart is driven off of feelings, off of emotions.
Absolutely.
And so I love
what a great metaphor, the heart. Mm-hmm. To describe that.
That is. And what's really neat is, go back to the science part of it, is one of the things we've learned over the last 25 years is there's neurons in the heart.
Mm.
The neurons in the heart have to deal with relationships. Mm. And we know this. If you think, language has said this before. When you're in love, where do you say? What comes up on Valentine's Day?
Oh, yeah.
What is it? A heart.
A heart, 100%. Right? Absolutely.
If you say a relationship broke up, where do you say you're broken?
Right. Oh, I've got a broken heart.
Broken heart. I'm heartbroken, right? You don't say I'm gut broken or I'm brain head broken or arm broken. I'm heartbroken. We know the neurons react to our connection to our relationship.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Right?
And so the feelings, and I love the way she said, atlas of the heart, not the head, not the gut, the heart, that relationship piece that makes us. And so we need to get a book like that, or you need to start looking at what are all the different levels. There's a thing called the feelings wheel people can Google out
there
that'll give you an idea of how feelings can have different language and different words. And one of the things we need to do that also gets brought up so much in nonviolent communication is, part of what also breaks down in communication is, if we do talk about feelings, we just talk about the negative feelings, if anything.
Okay.
We talk about when you hurt me, when you disgusted me, when you did this. We got to get equally, if not more, about talking about when we were in joy, when we were at peace, when we were excited. Gottman talks about, they'll go back to Gottman's work. He says that one of the difference between the healthy, he'll call them often masters of relationship, or the unhealthy couples that he calls disasters of the relationship, is that when they're communicating or interacting verbally or nonverbally, is that they do or create 5 times as much feeling or conversation that are on the healthy, positive side than they do on the negative. It's a 5-to-1
value. Yeah, the 5-to-1 ratio.
5-to-1 ratio, where it's like, I am showing joy, appreciation, happiness with you long before I'm showing disgust or anything else.
That's so good.
And that part, so when I share my feelings, I want to share it and say, okay, yes, there's still good here. And I got to be reflecting on that. That's that gratitude and appreciation. But then if you are hurting me, okay, so I feel this specific word. Okay, that's where it is. The only thing that comes after I feel is a feeling. Not I feel, you know, I feel that you, and here's how I often have it.
Right.
I feel that you don't understand me.
Yeah.
That's not a feeling.
That's not a feeling.
That's not a feeling, right? That's an attack. That's a blame.
Yeah, it's a blame.
But we'll do that so much. I feel that you. It's so much a conversation in my own life, and then watching others starts there. No, I feel happy, sad, disgusted, fearful, whatever. It's got to be a feeling.
Mm.
If we can do that, so I observe, I feel. The next step in Rosenberg's part is a need. What's underlying the feeling is a need is not being met.
Mm.
Do we even know what the heck the need is?
Right.
Right. But there is a need. I only feel hurt, or I only feel joy when you either met my need, I feel joy. You didn't meet my need, I feel disgusted, negative, whatever, right? So we gotta get crystal clear with what the need is. You know, I need help.
Yeah.
Right? I need support. I need love. Now, that's a harder one because love can mean a bunch of different things. So we got to then define what is it that's needed for you to experience love, even support. What is it? Because what naturally we do so many times is I'm going to love you or support you the way I need support.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So we got to get it. What's the specific need that you're having at this moment?
Okay.
So I observed this, I felt this, and I needed this. Okay. Once we get to the need, then he'll say the final step of this is to make a request, not a demand. So I am requesting that you rephrase this, or I am requesting that you take out the garbage when you didn't take out the garbage, right? Or I'm requesting that you call me when you're going to be home late or whatever. Because the
I think for a lot of men, you know, the reality around just like sexual intimacy with their partners could really be explored with this distinction that we're making on a request versus a demand.
That's exactly. Tell me more, and I'll say.
Well, just thinking. I mean, I'm thinking vulnerably about my own relationship, and then so many of the men that I work with. I mean, there's a lot that could be said here, but I think sometimes our desire for sex is wrapped up with our anxiety and just ways that we manage emotions. It doesn't have to be that way for all guys, but I think it is for many of us. And I know when I'm feeling anxious or just honestly very horny, it's easy for me to just almost demand sex from my wife as though, you know, it was that easy. And I've had to learn, I'm learning, I'll put it that way, because I'm not great at it always. I'm learning to figure out how to communicate it as a request in this kind of process rather than just a demand. And more often than not, she's a lot more receptive to it if it comes in this form of a request rather than a demand.
Absolutely. Everyone tends to respond better to requests, right? Especially if you would label the request and how that fits a need for you.
100%.
Right? If you could say, here's how this is going to fulfill a need for me. Do you understand how deep, you know, where the need's coming from, what this will do? And then if we can come back and say, okay, now what's your need as well, right? And things. But it is, you know, whether it's a teacher in the classroom, whether it's a parent, or whether it's our spouse or anything, requests instead of demands. If we would just start there. And how can I, and again, because that go back to Gottesman's thing, that's a soft startup. I am requesting that you explore this, that you do this, that whatever, versus you better do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or if you don't do it, worse yet than a demand, it's an ultimatum.
Right, right.
Right? Not only is it a demand, but an ultimatum. You don't do it, and I'm going to hurt you, or I'm going to withhold something you need from you.
Yes.
Right? Which is what we do, right? So yes, if we can just get to the point of a request, identify what is the request, but that means getting curious with ourselves.
Absolutely.
What is it? Yes. Okay, I want sex, intimacy. Okay, fine. I want that, but why? Yeah. What's the need? Maybe it is I'm just horny, but tell them, hey, I'm
but
so attracted to you.
But a lot more
you,
than that.
But a lot of times it's more than
or
that,
we've
right?
had a really busy week, we haven't connected,
right.
And I so value just the closeness of that experience for a variety of different reasons, you know, could we work toward that tonight?
That's it. And those, if we can explain that level, right? And to have some clarity, oftentimes the person, our spouse or our partner will be much more open to that because it's a request.
Right.
We're not demanding, we're requesting. And they're seeing the reason for it.
Yes.
Versus them just going, well, okay, well, fine, it's me or heck, go just to porn.
Right.
There's no connection. Say this is about connection. This is about me getting out of my world and getting in with you.
Sure.
Right? Gain in with us. Explain that and really be aware of that for yourself, that's why you're doing it, right?
Sure.
And when we can do those things, relationship and communication gets so much better. Because now I can make a request of you. You can make a request of me. We may or may not be able to respond to that request right away, but at least we know what the request is. And we can keep then kind of working towards where is the unified part that our requests can meet together, right? And that's the key. And that's what I loved about what Dr. Rosenberg did is that he's saying, okay, so let's keep it at that level, right?
Yeah.
What's the observations? What's the feelings? What's the needs? And what's the request? Yeah. When's the last time you've seen on, you know, the internet, social media, people requesting something of someone?
So, okay, I want to go there for a second. I'm going to ask a bit of a tough question. I don't know that I have the answer, but I think it's worth exploring in light of some of our conversations this weekend and what we've been talking about even in this episode, I'll ask it kind of in an extreme way, but we can nuance it. Is it possible for us to have this type of communication that we've been describing that's healthy and geared toward true connection with others? Is that possible online through social media or, you know, through these digital mediums? I'm becoming more and more skeptical that it is, but I don't want to completely close it off. And like I said, I don't feel certain about it. What comes up for you, Alan, when I ask that?
Yeah, I would agree with you. It is, and again, it's why I want to have this conversation. Sure. Is at the level that we've chosen to define those platforms right now, I don't think so. That's my concern, right? Okay. However, I am still believing, and maybe it's getting less and less common to believe this way. I keep looking for it, but I still want to believe that we can grow and that we can figure out a way to find the connectedness in that medium. But okay. I think it's going to take a mindset shift and a culture shift, you know, to be able to do it. I think we got to redefine, because here's the problem is, again, I go back to what I said at the beginning. We've started using those platforms for the immediate dopamine hit, for that immediate reward.
I'm sorry, I'm going to pause just real quick. I couldn't agree more. But one of the ways that I see that coming out as a type of immediate dopamine reward is, are you familiar with the phenomenon of dunking on someone online?
No, explain that.
So it's the idea of when, let's say, someone posts something political or just, you know, kind of out there that would be potentially controversial. Another person goes in and just uses their, let's say, more evolved intellect or however we might say it, to really kind of show them that what they said is absolutely stupid, makes no sense, attacking their character because, you know, their words weren't as sophisticated. So it's known as dunking, where you just go in and almost as a type of cheap shot.
Yeah.
Attack the person and belittle them.
So it sounds like, I mean, yeah, we're going to Gottman stuff. Sounds like now we're not only going into criticism, we're going into contempt, right?
I think so.
These people are so stupid, or this argument is so dumb, right? It's not even the person. And so, no, I hadn't heard that term. I appreciate you bringing it. I love conversations where I learn new terms. My teenagers in my counseling office teach me all kinds
of
stuff.
Me too, all the time.
Many things I don't want to know, but I guess I have to know. Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. And I think that's where
it's about being right or better. There's no listening. There's not a soft start.
So can we do this instead and say, you know, again, it would take a culture shift, but say, I appreciate what you're saying. However, may I share my thoughts?
Totally.
May I share my insights?
Totally.
And come at it from that place and say, can we talk about this? Can we discuss this? Can we have discourse about this? And you go back and forth about, okay, what is it that is, again, your observations, your feelings, your needs, your requests, versus you're a terrible person for having that observation, feeling, need, or request, yes, right? And I think we got to culture shift it to saying, and it's what I've tried to do on my social media. My social media, I have deleted comments at times when it gets to that attack level. Okay. We will talk about the level of a discussion. I will leave that open. Okay. And I use my social media. If you go to my Facebook page, it is strictly about me sharing thoughts of the day. I also share recipes. I'm a big believer in trying to eat healthy. So I think what fuels the body, fuels the mind, fuels the relationships. Sure. But that's another part. But what I primarily use it for is to spark empathetic, growth-oriented conversations daily. And what I'm trying to do is switch that, and not to shut down conversation. I encourage conversation, but I want to keep it at the conversational level. I will absolutely not allow when it gets into contempt and criticism.
Yeah.
I will, you know, put a boundary there, and I'll still encourage that people to engage, but I will ask them to do it without the personal attacks, without the criticism and the contempt. And if we can come at it from that level,
education is necessary.
We need a lot of education. We need a new way of saying that this is about, you know, again, it's called social media. Social media means we're supposed to be more social. We're supposed to be more connected. The problem is, I don't see that building connection.
Yes. You know, that's such a great point, Alan. I think what's coming up for me, too, and we were discussing this at breakfast, is maybe clarifying the why of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Are we actually trying to connect on social media, or are we trying to prove a point, or again, sort of dunk and make a score for our side, our tribe, our team?
Yeah.
I think those are some hard realities we have to wrestle with.
I think so. And that's why I love having these conversations and keep
Me
going.
Too.
Can we get to I'll say the other thing that I think we've moved away from in this part of instant gratification and all that, is that we're moving away from living a life of that's based on values.
Okay, yeah.
And we're moving towards this part of whatever gives me a reward.
I couldn't agree more.
We have lost the why. You know, like you said, you're bringing up a guy named Simon Sinek that was a business consultant, become very popular. You can look him up sometime if you want. But basically, he came up with that. And he said, you know, that when he looked around, he went to all the top corporations, and why did the better corporations seem to make it. You know, he often used, when Steve Jobs was there, for better or worse, that Apple being one of the ones that showed kind of the most cohesiveness in their ability, from the top of the top person, senior VP, down to the custodian that was cleaning the floors in the bathrooms.
Sure.
They all had a coherent understanding of why what they did was important to the overall. And he said, in any organization, if they understand the why, then they will naturally have a better understanding of the how to do something and the what to do, and they'll be more committed to
yeah.
it. And they live by this value of it, right? It's not what they're doing or even how they're doing it. It's the value of what they do and how they do it that matters. And I think what we need to do more in our culture is get back to, what are our common values? Right? Not what are our common differences, what are our common values, and what is the value that we all live by? Mm. And I don't think families, in my opinion, in my experience, and even in my own, I question my own family and my own experiences at times. Are we living to a value, or are we just living to an outcome somewhere real quick?
Yeah.
Right?
That's a good
point.
And
getting back to the value-based living. But that's a lot more work. And we don't want to do it. And we want to blame people for why we don't have values, or blame the world, or do
sure.
that. But ultimately, we're responsible for our values. But getting back to that, and I think on social media, it's okay. So if the value originally was called social media, social means to be in conversation. Social means to be connected. I mean, you were meant to be a friend, right? We call ourselves friends. I don't think any of us would say most of us are friendly many times on social media. What you're saying, dunking is not friendly.
Right.
A friend doesn't do that. If I have a difference with you, I'm your friend. I may say, hey, man, that doesn't seem like a really cool opinion. Or,
right.
I think that, you know, that's got some flaws in it. And as a friendly, I would do that. If I'm not really your friend, but I think I want to be your friend, I say, man, you're a dumb idiot for doing that, right?
Correct.
And stuff. And that's going to break it down. My problem is, we go social media. It's not social. It's not friendly. Yet we call it social media and we call it friends.
That's so true.
It's not the value. I mean, unless we've changed those terms in the definition, then we better go back to Merriam-Webster's dictionary and start defining friends and social differently, right?
That's so good.
But what's the value? We've now turned it and we've said that a friend is just someone I can dunk. Really? How is that a friendship?
Totally.
Right? How is that social? Right? I can block you. I can ghost you. How is that social? Right? So we got to get back to the values and discussing values and saying, okay, you have this need. You have this need, but what's the value that unites us? You have this feeling, what's the value that can maybe intersect those feelings, right? And I think about that, and again, I'm not going to go off into a quagmire because I know it's a presidential year and stuff, but I look at it at our governmental level,
at
our worldly level. You know, one of the things that just hit me, and hopefully this isn't the truth, but right now what I'm hearing, and I try to stay out of most of the he said, she said, because I see too much contempt, too much criticism, and all of it, whatever side you're on. But one of the things that really concerns me is I heard that there is a strong potential that we could have the first time in recent history since like television or radio to have a presidential election where there's no debates going on. No debates. We had them a little
bit. How is that healthy?
How do we pick at our person when even our top leaders can't converse in a nonviolent way? Or refuse to do it. They stonewall. What that's saying is, I can't converse with you. I can't converse with you because we can't share our parts. So we're going to stonewall.
Yeah.
And this may be the first election that the presidential candidates never have a debate. To me, that's the sign of the breakdown of society. We should be able to debate. To debate doesn't mean that I attack you. It means you have a platform. I have a platform. Let's discuss our differences. And then each of us make a decision on where we stand on that, right? And so if we can't even converse nonviolently at that level, no wonder we're having trouble online and individually. I mean, it's all cyclical in some ways. Sure. And that's the conversation change we have to have. Is how do we stop doing these things and how do we start doing the healthy things where we can
absolutely
connect in a human-based way, truly healthy social way again?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Alan, I feel like that's maybe a great place to come to an end. I've really enjoyed this conversation and I've learned a lot. I guess before we do hit the button, is there anything else that you feel like you'd want to share to maybe tie up any loose end or just to get across your heart?
Yeah, really the thing that just comes to me, and I think it's just almost with what I think your heart started with when you started this, which is, can we just continue the conversation, but can we continue it in a heartfelt, empathetic, nonviolent way and learn to talk with one another, not at one another? It's really all I want. I think it's all that our culture wants and what our families and friends need. And so I appreciate this platform.
Yeah.
I appreciate having this to do. And that's really all my heart is let's just do that. And if someone wants to reach out to me and wants to continue a conversation, again, I will converse about nearly anything as long as we will do it in a healthy way where we're talking with one another, not at one another.
That's great. Okay, Alan, thank you so much. And I hope that we will continue the conversation.
I do too.